From Chibok with love. Perhaps humanists should pause from time to time and ask themselves a simple, straightforward, even neighborly question. What do religionists really want? Not what they worship. That is beyond rational comprehension for many, but what do they really seek? After all, society is built on the practical, unavoidable principle of coexistence. If this proposed exercise appears strange, it is perhaps because society is very much in denial, afraid to confront such a focused question, lest it receive an answer that imposes unwanted responsibilities on the rest of its members. We prefer to take refuge in the narratives of ancient wrongs and even, sometimes legitimately, wallow in present contradictions. However, if society appears to be foundering, and along lines that clearly indicate religious factors, the world being in no shortage of current exemplars, then it becomes a duty, even for self-preservation, to understand what the various constituent parts seek for their self-fulfillment. And so to the question once again, what do religionists really want? For most, the answer is simple: to serve God by whatever name. That, for the larger humanity, should remain unexceptionable. The devil you know is better than the one you don't. Unfortunately, not all religionists are content with that aspiration, or else, even more critically, raise issues of how they propose to fulfill such a supposedly harmless mission. We're speaking here of a resolute but proliferating minority who declare their objective as the right to intervene dictatorially in the rights, mores, and undertakings of others in the name of their presiding deity. This claim to the privileged exercise of control is what plagues the world in ever-expanding arenas of conflict. A belief that absolute authority is invested in them by a supreme, though invisible, entity to meddle in the lives of others, not even in an advisory role, not even as provider of optional guidelines and insights, but with an absolutism that brooks no dissent. The ambition of such religionists is nothing less than to place all of humanity under their jurisdiction. That declaration is stark, undisguised. Its brutal efforts at actualization presently infest global existence, some parts more lethally than others, but with increasing assertiveness, resolve, including the insertion of sleeper warriors in supposedly insulated societies. It is therefore not sufficient to decry religious extremism. The problem is best understood and tackled in terms of domination against freedom, thus setting aside the emotive blackmail that accompanies the condemnation of the intolerable, indeed the all-out assault on humanity by the myrmidons of religious imperialism. Fundamentally, in spite of the prominence of schisms in the intensification of religious carnage, we should avoid the distraction by claims of one set of beliefs against another. It is certainly of academic, historic interest when one sect promotes the supremacy of precedence, to which a purity and authenticity of belief is then attached as against later corruption, quotation marks, against which an orgy of purification is then launched. Or its reverse order, the proposition that the original scroll of beliefs, known sometimes as scriptures, was one of imperfection, the hidden conclusion of which has merely lain in wait in the wings, presumably to see how humans doom themselves in advance with the worship of false gods, until the emergence of absolute truth, ideally signaled by the appearance of a charismatic preacher. All these are noteworthy niceties, plus a thousand contradicting fragments and variations that pit one sect of believers against another. They are areas of interest, often of mystification, but should never be allowed to obscure the fundamental truth as it affects the rest of us, that the conflict between humanists and religionists has always been one between the torch of enlightenment and the chains of enslavement. And let me state that one wishes that we were speaking merely of invisible chains. Alas, the chains we speak of are also not merely visible, but cruelly palpable. All too often, they lead directly to the gallows, to beheadings, to death under a hail of stones. In numerous parts of the world today, the scroll of faith is indistinguishable from the roll call of death. What humanity has reaped from these scrolls of faith, pulled down from nowhere in the firmament by those who have been considered sages, prophets, messiahs, is one that has manifested itself historically as inimical to human inclusiveness and social cohesion. Yet, such scrolls continue to be advertised as documents that deserve human adulation, treated with reverence even by non-believers. Not even though disputes over the interpretation of their tenets and even history, such as their coming in being in the first place, have spilled over millennia, continue till today, and have never ceased to foment strife of an increasingly virulent nature. It is such scrolls, treasured as infallibility made flesh, that make the creed of humanism not only a necessary counter, but a human imperative. We're not yet speaking our own truths to religion, or else are failing to find a language that penetrates in an effective way the hearing of that minority that needs to hear them. Those whose mission is to set this palpable world on fire through adherence to a vaporous hereafter, where the incendiary mission in the substantive here and now will be rewarded. Humanism requires a new tactical language, and what that language expresses requires a drastic shift in emphasis. We must take on the duty of telling the enemy openly, it is not spiritual fulfillment that you seek, but power. Control. Power in its crudest form. Humanism requires to develop a distinct philosophy of transformative aggression. At this moment, in the lives of communities across the globe, taking note of the havoc wreaked daily by the doctrine of religious impunity, there is far too much appeasement and toleration in the language we bring to each confrontation. There comes a time when our humanity accepts that there must be an end to an attitude that is best captured in that Yoruba expression, fitiju karun. Literally, that means the contracting of a disease through politeness. Translated yet again, this time into the fashionable language of a social morbidity that mistakes sophistry for sophistication, that flaccid language of political correctness has become the problem. In short, we have reached a pass where, paradoxically, tolerance is far more pernicious than intolerance. Far worse than both, however, is avoidance. An avoidance of socially uncomfortable issues, once the claims and sensibilities of religion are invoked, the timorous avoidance of that crucial avenue of socialized coexistence known variously as discussion, debate, discourse, etc., even argument, an avoidance that dooms the very enthronement of civilized norms of interaction, while opening wide thoroughfares of blood and destruction. For those of us who consider a bruising encounter with the mere weaponry of words and ideas infinitely preferable to the massacres that come suddenly upon community, infinitely preferable to the slaughter of innocents, often by the most degrading means, preferable to the mutilation of humanity in the name of whatever god or goddesses are invoked in the act, the subject of religion is one that must be brought openly to the table with other national and global concerns, such as poverty, social welfare, corruption, shelter, soil erosion, hunger, disease, environmental degradation, and all other societal mandates. We live in a world, it seems, where it is not only possible but is considered virtuous by some to abduct 200 girl pupils from a sanctuary of learning in the name of religion, and the world is rendered impotent. We're reduced to pious incantations such as, "These aggressors are not true followers of the faith. Our faith does not sanction killings, abductions, sectarian targeting, or the designation of other humans as infidels, and thus as disposable material in the promotion of faith." We have to ask such leadership penitents, were there times that you kept silent when such states of mind, overt or disguised, were seeding the grounds of fanaticism around you? Are you vicariously liable? When the present conflagrations were mere embers, did you, either by direct pronouncement or eloquent silence, fan those embers? Did you at the time tacitly spread the cloak of impunity for atrocities once the divine right of faith defense is invoked? Most crucially, is your perception of the world we all inhabit one that exists under your total jurisdiction? These are not rhetorical questions, but questions directed at the stubborn arrogance of faith attestation over secular conviction, in the course of which coexistence becomes a laughable indulgence in contradictions. These have become the lived questions in my part of the world. Let others critically examine whether theirs are not pertinent and affected in their own societies. So when I'm asked, what on earth is happening in your nation, Nigeria? I can only refer such puzzled questioners to my BBC Reith Lectures, Climate of Fear, which makes the question more accurately, what is happening in your world? In those lectures, I warn that those who claim jurisdiction over the world under the banner of faith will discover, sooner or later, that they have merely spawned yet others who will lay claim to a superior dedication to that faith over and above their predecessors. They proceed to supplant their mentors with their greater capability for instilling fear, and not merely fear among so-called infidels, but even more over their original mentors. This is the lesson that is being implanted today by the bloodiest strain of Islamism, Boko Haram, that the world has known in recent times, if it is ever possible, of course, to expunge the memory of the Algerian experience. The lesson of Boko Haram is not for any one nation, however. It is not for the continent alone, the African continent. The world should wake up to the fact that the menace is borderless, aggressive, and unconscionable. Do take note of their primary acts when the religious insurgents first swept into northern Mali. Study the history of Boko Haram in its zones of operation since it first reared its head in Nigeria nearly a decade ago. ISIS is primarily about power. Religion, its mere stalking horse. In ever-expanding regions of the world, human existence has become brutish, at best precarious and nightmarish, punctuated by horrors that appear to precede the very end of humanity and those values that attempt to define it. Through isolated acts of sudden and arbitrary violence, the world is being programmed to accept as due collective punishment any assaults on humanity as legitimate response to real, imagined, or purposely designated slights on religion and disrespect to its avatars, thousands of miles away from where the crime was allegedly committed. New generations will grow up regarding such exactions as the norm, while zombies walk among us, primed for any crime against humanity when the religious cord is twanged. The world of political correctness lies prostrate, contrite, in the face of offenses that are not even of their own making. So, what should be our response to such aggression? Each event must dictate its own methodology of response, but a basic rule is certainly not a response that fails to take cognizance of the dynamic world context in which we exist. Certainly not a response that fails to challenge the arrogance of religious imperialism and also redresses the permissive laxity of the past. We need to deploy a new language whose message is, the world is not your jurisdiction. Each time some wound to religious sensibilities is used to unleash terror on innocent communities, the response should be to invade that region and inundate its space with the very material that is alleged to have given offense. An aerial bombardment with weapons of the mind, invade that space through whatever medium of transmission is feasible. If textual, pages, chapters, illustrations, word clusters floating in space, descending on church steeples, minarets, schools, farms, factories, prisons, markets, and barracks, floating down on their pompous, hypocritical chambers, where self-designated theologians order the arrest, torture, imprisonment, decapitations, and hangings of those alleged to be enemies of an unseen deity. Rain down leaflets on the Sambisa forests, where our children are presently held under conditions of extreme degradation and trauma. Rain down leaflets that reprogram minds fallen victim of doctrinal abuse by religion. Explore the wounds on insecurity already gouging the self-esteem of gloating, arrogant, seemingly crazed abductors and their allies everywhere, who dance their mockery of the world on video. It goes beyond Chibok and Sambisa Forest. The ultimate purpose remains paramount, to dent the sanctimonious self-righteousness of those who question our right to volition and human dignity. Collectively, we must irradiate the enclaves of atavism with humane alternatives, new vistas of the world, new insights into history, new propositions of human relationships of gender, race, beliefs, classes, and identities. Above all, however, act. That imperative is upon us, will it or not. Act in a resolute manner that demonstrates that humanity is not so supine that it will absorb obscene affronts to its defining right to dignified existence. I thank you for the honor of this award. I dedicate it to the prisoners of innocence in the forest of Sambisa, Nigeria.